What's good, wagering world? It's your boy Five Star in Vegas. I'm broadcasting live as always from my home in beautiful Summerlin, Nevada. And here with my co-host, the OG of the show, the only Sacramento Kings fan that I know. What's good? Spread a stare from the black hole.
Man, I'm excited to talk about some NFL football today. Of course, the college season wrapped up this week, but we have three exciting games left in the NFL season, and we're going to break down two of them today.
Yeah, man, it gets here so fast. You blink, and next thing you know, it's a new year, and the football season has came and went. We got a great guest coming on later, a good friend of mine, Sean King. It's only been, I believe, six rookie quarterbacks to play in conference championship games, and he was one of those who was able to reach that feat. And what's more prevalent for guys like us, he was the only one that covered the spread in the championship game. The rest of those guys did not cover. So we'll talk a little bit later to Sean and get his thoughts on Jaden Daniels and the playoffs as a whole, and who does he think going to end up raising the Lombardi Trophy from a guy who's actually been in the fire in these big games, playing for it all, and who actually has a Super Bowl ring as well. Speaking of the black hole, the Raiders get the OG Pete Carroll today. What do you think about that one, Spread?
I don't think it matters.
You don't seem too thrilled, Spread.
I just don't think there's anything they could have done this offseason. You can't win in the NFL without a quarterback. They have the toughest division in the league.
Trade for a quarterback, Spread.
I don't think they are. Who are they going to get?
Fred, I think Tennessee is going to be foolish enough to trade. I think they're going to go with the kid another year, Will Levis. I don't think they want to reset so quick. I think Callahan kind of believes in them enough, and they also don't want to get tied up in a knot. He got two quarterbacks on rookie deals.
Yeah, I'll be surprised. I think Tennessee's going Ward, and I think Sanders is going to end up in New York, but we'll see how it goes.
It might. You know what? I'm starting to hear a little bit more talk about that he likes the Giants. So maybe Pat Shurmur told them, you know, like, I like New York and how they're running things, and that's a good organization for him to be at. You know, it all boils down to his father, because we know Coach Prime, just much like Archie Manning, has a lot of power behind the scenes. It's power that, you know, Tom Thumb, that's sitting in his basement on X, does not have. So they don't even understand some of the real dealings of the world of the National Football League. But, you know, they're going to make sure that he's drafted somewhere where his dad wants him to go and where he won't have any pushback.
As far as I know, the Giants are a good organization, right? This isn't Cleveland. This isn't Cincinnati. Yeah, this isn't Jacksonville. They just hired the wrong people, but they're not cheap. They let the people work, right? Yeah. I mean, they're not firing coaches every year.
Does Daboll get along with Coach Sanders? Do they like each other? Because anyone who knows that they're going to deal with Shador, you know you're going to have to deal with his family. This happens with every football player. It's just that his family happens to be famous, you know. So that's one thing we got to look at. But I still believe Shador is going to be a Las Vegas Raider.
Man, that's the case. I'll be more excited about this season. I just don't see how he ends up here without the Raiders mortgaging their future. I just feels like you'd have to give up a couple first-round picks to move up. And I don't think that would work either. I would be pissed if I was Deion and you give up two first-round picks, because even if Shador's good, how are you going to get him help? Well, I mean, there's more than – it's not like this team is just a quarterback away. They need help everywhere.
He's shown in the past that he knows how to work this formula, as we saw with him almost going to the Super Bowl with Russell Wilson his rookie year and actually winning the championship in his second year with a defense. And if you look at the Raiders, they have some really good pieces on defense, starting with maybe the best player in the NFL on defense, Max Crosby, who's in win-now mode, who's in his prime. You have Brock Bowers on the offensive side, who's a young rookie, who's a difference maker, a tight end. He's a tight end that's so good that he's almost like Tony Gonzalez and Kelsey, where you have to plan for him now, and that makes life much easier for the wide receivers. We also saw Jack Jones, which is my homie, take a step to being really a number one cornerback. He's not getting paid. And I don't know if you know, Jack gives them team-friendly love because, you know, they gave him another chance, or if he goes and get the check that he deserves, but they're going to have to pay him because he's a really good player that's really no one knows outside of the Vegas market. They have a lot of good players on defense over here. And with Pete Carroll's ability to hire good assistants and his ability to CEO things, he's going to make it where they're not beating themselves anymore. So Aiden O'Connell isn't really a bad quarterback. He's not, he doesn't suck. You know, like if they have to roll with him again, they still could get to the playoffs with him. He just he's just not a guy that could take you over the top, you know?
Yeah, here's my last concern about Carroll too. And you know this, especially from watching college more than pro, the key to Pete Carroll's success in Seattle was that he came from USC, right?
Yeah.
So he had been scouting all those dudes. So what did he do? He came in, he nailed all those fourth, fifth, and sixth round picks because he had been playing against him and scouting him, right? So he got like, what? I can't remember off the top of my head, right? But it was like Cam Chancellor was a fourth round pick, right? Richard Sherman, I can't remember, but it felt like he was a sixth round pick, right? It just, they nailed every single late round pick. I don't know if he's going to be able to do that, not directly coming from USC.
Well, look at the team he just left. For McDonald, those are all kids on defense, Brett, and Seattle has one of the best rosters in the league. Those are kids on offense. True. They picked really well under Pete Carroll, man. So I think that you don't lose that. I think he's always been a guy with a good eye for young talent and knowing exactly. He has a formula that he used for cornerbacks. You know, he likes them kind of tall and lanky, with some speed, and used to be receivers, so they have really good ball skills. He likes his running backs to be aggressive, strong, low to the ground. He has, like, you know, these different prototypes that he has for his players. So now he has it. Either he could take, this is so funny, with him being with the Raiders, and if they make the move that I think they are, you have either Geno Smith that he had at Seattle with Shador, or now you have Russell Wilson with Cam Ward. So,
I do not want Russell Wilson.
No, what I mean by that is Cam Ward is, his prototype is Russell Wilson. Not saying that he's going to sign. No.
I just don't see how we get any of those top quarterbacks without
saying that for Russell Wilson to get some money. His agent, Pete Carroll, doesn't like Russell Wilson.
Yeah, so I think they like each other. I just don't think he wants to work with them.
No, he does. Now, he probably like him as a guy, but
he
feel like he sold him out for the Super Bowl. That team has never forgiven Russell for doing that. Like, no one on that team has, because Russell audibled into that play. That was not a call from the sidelines, and people keep it under wraps. But Pete Carroll, I'm saying, he's worked with a guy like Russell Wilson, and if you look at Cam Ward, he's like a juiced up version of Russell Wilson. I feel like they play a lot of like, more like the young Russell. So that's what I meant by that, is he has a lot of experience of going into situations where his defense is where he's hanging the hat. He's going to run the ball. These guys are pros, spread, as we saw by the Broncos. As Bo Nix got into the offense more, Sean Payton got into the offense more, guys that you didn't know who were guys, because this is the pros. It's a lot of talent everywhere. So even though you don't know a lot of the names for the Raiders, you and I watch them every week. The Raiders were competitive in every game, spread. They are really, they play hard. And to me, they have a decent roster. It's not like they're like at the bottom of the row, like the Panthers or something with their roster.
Yeah. The one thing the Panthers have though, is they have that quarterback situation figured out. I think they have the better offensive line. And yeah. I'm just worried about, you know, we talked about that division. Who's going to get worse? I mean, we just talked about the Broncos.
Chargers.
I would expect them to get better.
The Chargers.
I think the Chargers will get better too.
I don't think so. The reason why this is, a lot of people are talking about the fact that Harbaugh is having like a transplant, a heart, something with his heart, man. And
oh, really?
Yeah, and he's having a hip replacement surgery. I've been around older people my whole life because I was fortunate enough to be raised by my grandparents. My grandfather had my grandmother at 55 and my grandmother was 50. So they were really older people raising me, and I was around a lot of older people. And I know that hip problem is something that is really bad for older humans. You know, like, it's something that's very difficult. You don't realize how big your hip is a part of your life. Like me, I injured my hip a couple weeks ago, man, and I was like, man, I don't ever want to feel like this again, you know, because you take all your movements and stuff for granted. So I hope that Coach Harbaugh heals good, and I'm praying he does, but I know he's going to probably miss time away from the team dealing with all of these surgeries and rehabilitation he's about to have to do. So I would not be surprised if they take a small step back next year. It's going to be just a tough division anyway. Sooner or later, Kansas City has to come back to earth. You know, maybe they have a Patriots run. How long did the Patriots win the AFC East? Like, what, like 10 years straight or something like that? So
yeah, I think they're going to be a run like that.
Yeah,
I
mean, it's going to be similar to that because nobody even seems close to them. They ever want to be fighting for the two spot. So I think that the Raiders can get in there personnel-wise with the Chargers and Broncos. I think all three of those teams kind of play a similar style. So we'll see. What did you think about your girl, Ciante? Man, she bust up our parlay spread. I bet that so heavy. I was so happy. The Rockets, Sabs was easy. I went to sleep. I was like, I just wake up to some money. When I woke up and none of my group had texted me, I knew then. I say, man, something happened. I went and looked on the phone. I didn't have anybody in my account spread. I couldn't believe that Iga did me like that. And she had match point. And then I went and looked at the match again, and she was out there tripping again, spread. What's wrong with Iga, man?
That's the reason she has a psychologist. She definitely struggles under the pressure. I mean, and I thought that was the difference in that match. And we had talked before, Madison Keys did have the style to beat her. You have to be a hitter. You can't be passive when you're playing her. So great win for Keys. You know, I'm a big Keys fan. I didn't expect it either. But I'm excited to see how she does. Obviously, Sabalenka, the rightful favorite there in the final. But, you know, I'm going to be rooting for my girl, Madison.
I think Maddie has a chance, man. I think she does. I think that's a confident booster for sure. And what I liked was the best part of that match when I looked at it, spread, was when I watched the replay. Did you see what after the second set when Maddie was about to serve and Eagles over there just going crazy sweet, doing practice returns?
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
I said, man, I think this girl she's got a little something going on, man. I think she might be on the spectrum because I'm like, they thinking she's doing it being ugly, but I kind of was thinking she doesn't even realize what she was doing, you know? And she's just over there swinging away, and then Maddie just comes up and just serves an ace right down the tee. She doesn't make an expression, so that was just a really interesting match. But it cost us, but we were able to do really well on the Rockets. Man, I'm really pleased that my guy Sean King just pulled up. Let's get him in there, spread. Man, the only quarterback to do this besides five other gentlemen. Now we got Jay Daniels, man, to start in the conference championship game as a rookie, a good friend of mine, man, Super Bowl winner, Sean King.
Happy 2025. I did find out an interesting statistic. I was the only rookie quarterback thus far to start in the conference championship game whose team covered. Very disrespectful 14-point spread.
Yeah, John, I've been pumping that up. This boy on ESPN 97.5, I actually told him that I said boy was the only one to cover. Give him the crown. The
rest very of disrespectful.
Guys blew out.
We had four Pro Bowlers in our starting 11 on defense, and there was a 2-touchdown spread.
Against, yeah, that was given.
That's how
we can't catch that like that now, Sean. We wish we could catch a spread like that now, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, them the good old days. Quick couple questions for you, Sean. First, what was the biggest transition being a rookie quarterback going from leading a college locker room to now you're in the huddle with grown men that are looking you in your eyes and expect you to lead them?
I think it's different for every situation. The stability that was in Tampa kind of made it so I didn't have to be like the head dog. You know, I just kind of had to hold my own weight and per se. But, I mean, the game was different. I mean, back then, if I threw the ball, a D lineman could take 2 steps, pick me up, drive me into the ground.
Yeah.
You know, put his kneecap in my chin, tell me he going to kill me. And it was a part of the game. And everything was under center, fullback, tight end. You know, now, two things. First of all, the guys are older. So yeah, these last two classes of quarterbacks have all been, you know, for the most part, 23 plus. When I turned 23, hell, I was going into year three in the NFL. So wow, they're older, so they're more mature, and the game is more tailored to them. Everything's in the shotgun, a lot of zone read, a lot of screens, you know. So when you get an elite player like Jaden, I mean, he can take the success and really see how high he can take it. So game has changed, but to answer your question, I think it's different from every situation.
Yeah, for sure. And Jaden is really blessed to have a guy like Cliff Kingsbury, who comes from that college style offense, that he kind of was one of those first guys that made it a pro thing. And now he's with Jaden, and he was smart enough. We always talk about on the show, and I feel like that's why Bryce struggled early. These coaches, and you've coached yourself and you played the position, they make the mistake of wanting to try to force their systems on quarterbacks instead of allowing the quarterback to do what he does best and kind of like tailoring their system to them. And you dealt with a lot with that at your time of playing football. It was just like, do as I say, you know, type offenses, right?
Yeah, 100%. Like, I'll never forget this. When John Gruden took over for Tony Dungy down in Tampa, you know, and Gruden's a brilliant offensive mind, he didn't even believe in the shotgun in 2 minutes. Like, if you wow, look at John and us in Tampa, we were under center in 2 minute offense. I will say this about Cliff Kingsbury, and this is kind of where I think timing is really important in life. Jaden is getting the second version of Cliff at the NFL level.
Yep.
So all the ideas that Kingsbury had when he inherited Kyler Murray and the Cardinals, he now has a better understanding of which ideas can be successful at this level, how to build off of certain schemes and sets and really, you know, create a dynamic offense. So he's a better coach this second go-round in the NFL than I think he was the first.
Yeah, definitely. I would definitely agree with you on that. And as you said, another thing that benefits these quarterbacks is transfer portal now and playing so many years ever since COVID now. Guys get, like you said, I talk about it all the time. I graduated at 17 years old. I was on Grambling campus at 17 years old. You in the league at 20, we used to do things a little bit faster. Seems like they're now allowing kids to be kids longer, and that's a good thing as you see on the field.
Hey, Fred, this is what it's like. Like, when you, like, people understand, like, football is a hard sport, man. I'm just, like, the amount of time that you practice compared to those 12 opportunities in college and 17 in the pros where you actually get to play a game, I mean, we're talking a lot of practice goes into those few performances. To have a kid be 24, 25 in college and break your records, like, that's like in the gambling space, like, good bettors take pride in what their outcomes are, right? They track their results. It'd be like a person hits a 16 parlay and gets credited with 6 wins on their win-loss record. You know what I'm
right,
saying?
Right, no doubt.
You know, playing in school for all these years, but other than that, I'm happy for him, man. Hopefully, Jaden can continue to carry the team. But I think that game's going to be about the others. I think we know what we're getting in Jaden. But can De'Ami Brown continue to play at the level he's played at? You know, Zach Ertz has made some really tough, critical catches. You know, you can go back to the Atlanta Falcons game. You know, so can the others continue to play? And then they've been opportunistic on defense. The Bucs kind of created their own issues. They fumbled a jet sweep to a wide receiver that the, you know, Commanders recovered. You know, they snapped the ball on a 3rd-and-1 hard count, you know, and then they forced Goff into some picks. So if they can keep, you know, the luck bug on their side, they can win. I don't think they will, but it's a possibility.
Yeah, Dan Quinn's a hell of a coach, and he makes guys rally. One question.
Damn, Jerry Jones, you had Dan Quinn.
You had him. You had him in Florida. What was he doing, Sean? Before I swing at the spread and let him ask you a couple questions, I want you to show people how difficult it is to be an NFL quarterback. Sean, give them one call in the huddle right now that you had coming from the sidelines from John Gruden.
Come on, man. It's not that difficult, man. Come on. You got it. Hey, Spread, I'm going to ask you to repeat this, okay? So I'm gonna say it slowly. Blast, wide bunch right, up counter motion, 72 crisscross, wide swing, X out. Anything strong, we want to go 98 bunch crunch. Any kind of weak press, we're going 200 jet smoke. Hard two, ready? Get that back to me, baby. Come on, get that back to me.
There's no way.
Come on, man. You got it.
I can't. Right there. It's on your phone. It's on the TV.
Come on, man.
And you, it just rolled off his tongue, Spread.
Yeah.
Like, you people do not respect the brilliance and the type of mind it takes to be a quarterback in the NFL just to give the play calls, and you still have to think about what you're about to do, lead the team, and then you're a rookie doing this. So just
it's man. A lot going on out there, and somebody, yeah, man. Somebody trying to hurt you.
On top of that. Go ahead, Spread.
All right. So, hey, during your run here, when you did this, right, you guys hosted the first playoff game. But then you went on the road for that NFC championship game. Yeah. How was it different being on the road this week? And there's a lot being made in the media space this week about the Commanders. This is their fourth straight road game. How did that affect you, and how do you think that affects our handicap or our breaking down of the game this weekend?
It definitely had an impact on us because it was loud. As it pertains to now, I don't think Philly's going to be louder than Detroit was. So I think it'll be a little smoother operating, you know, process for the, I want to call them the Redskins. God damn it, can y'all just change the name back to the Redskins?
I just said it last week on the show, son. Man. The drives aren't tripping. Why are you tripping?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Please change them back to the Redskins. But to your question, last week was going to be the most difficult. In that dome, I mean, Detroit really feeling like we got this our year to win it all. Like, they were locked in, so I think the weather might be a bigger issue. You know, if you look at the first half of Philly, the Rams, and the second half, look like two different games. Like, if somebody didn't tell you, you think like one was from one year in the playoffs and the other one was from another. Like, I mean, it switched up at halftime and went to like snowstorm, like sideways snow that you can see. You know, so that benefits Philly because of their run game. I mean, it's hard enough to tackle Saquon when the conditions are perfect, but when you get those weird weather conditions and you got to try and make that one-on-one tackle in space, that makes him even more dynamic than he already is. But to your question, I think last week was a bigger test from a communication standpoint for the Redskins offense than this week will be. And yes, I intentionally called on the Redskins.
Go ahead, Britt.
Yeah, let's continue this from the quarterback's perspective. So, when you were coming in that championship game as a rookie, did you feel more or less pressure? Like the idea that, hey, we're 14-point dogs, we're free rolling here, or was the pressure the same? Do you think the fact that a lot of people are just putting the Eagles back in the Super Bowl, do you think that helps or hurts Daniels and the Commanders?
Well, I want to dye the gray in my beard because I don't think I'm as old as people think, but I am old enough to, like, our Rams-Bucks NFC Championship game was in 1999.
Right.
So, as far as I know, there was not Twitter. I don't even think MySpace had hit the market yet. So we didn't have access to spreads. We had no idea. And it's not like Dungeon used it as, like, a motivational tool for us that week. The first time I knew we were 14-point dogs was when I saw this statistic. I was one rookie quarterback that covered. I didn't know. As far as pressure, again, I don't want to cop out, but I think it's an individual by individual basis. I didn't feel any pressure whatsoever. I was supremely confident in my ability. But in hindsight, I wish I would have had more butterflies. Because what happens in these situations that gets overlooked, if I was probably a little more experienced, and I'm not going to put the whole game on myself, but there was a couple times when I could have took a sack, and I think we'd have still won. And ultimately, we ended up winning the Super Bowl, but Hardy Nickerson wasn't on that Super Bowl team. Donnie Abraham wasn't on that Super Bowl team. Damian Robinson, Warrick Dunn, they weren't on that Super Bowl team. So all these guys that helped create what Tampa had become, this was their shot to win it. And you don't really feel that as a rookie because you're like, I'm going to go play my ass off. And if you lose, you're like, we'll be back here next year. I'll get them next year. It's hard to get to the conference championship game in that league. So I think it's almost better for a rookie as far as nerves, but then it's better to have a veteran from an experience standpoint.
Right, definitely. And what do you think about the two top dogs coming out this year. We've talked about this before. You and I off the air, and you've been one of the guys who've been most vocal in the media, letting guys know, like, that you feel like, you know, a couple guys that you came up with, like you and Dante Culpepper, slight. You guys should have got some more, you know, opportunities after the great showings that you guys had at Tampa Bay and Minnesota, respectively. And now we're getting to the point where it's a lot more guys are in the NFL, and props to the NFL for growing and adapting to allow these guys to show their game that we've always known that would work and that, you know, black quarterbacks have had. But now we have two at the top with Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward. This is supposed to be a down year for quarterback. What's your perspective on those two guys coming out, and what kind of pro careers do you expect from them?
I think both of them are going to be a result of where they end up.
Okay.
I do think it's a down quarterback year. I don't think either one of these guys goes in front of Jaden, Caleb, or Drake May.
Okay. And
there would have been some extremely, extremely deep conversations about where they fit as far as Bo Nix, J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix. So okay. If you look at it in that prism, it's not a great year. I think Cam Ward is a poor man's Caleb Williams. So I think his game is kind of similar. He's plays that risky style of football, tries to extend plays, super athletic, super arm talent, but terrible fundamentals, inconsistent ball discipline as far as ball gets knocked. He's really Caleb Williams in a lot of ways. Shedeur is a less talented version of Cam Ward. Like, Cam has more arm talent. Cam's a better athlete. So I think they're both going to be depending on where they end up. I really do. I don't think either one of them are going to go to organization and Josh Allen it.
Right. I
mean, like, you know, by themselves, like, single-handedly. Like, sort of like people look at Cam and what they did in Miami, but Miami was loaded on offense. I mean, there's not one game that the Hurricanes showed up where they didn't have more talent offensively than the opponent.
Right.
And if he ends up in Cleveland or somewhere like that, or the Giants, I mean, I don't know that they're that talented to make it work. If, you know, they're able to drop, you know, to a better situation. You know, I actually think for a young quarterback, Tennessee would be the place I would want to go. But if you're Tennessee, can you pass Travis Hunter for a quarterback that you normally wouldn't have a high first-round grade on? You know, I just think, you know, I wish Tennessee was picking fifth or sixth, because I think that, because they got Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears. They already got Calvin Ridley. Defensively, that defense anchored by Jeff Simmons, like, they're not far away, and they don't need a Pro Bowl quarterback. They just need a average quarterback that don't Will Levis, you know, which is, you know, implode at some point in every game. So we'll see how it shakes out. But I would manage the expectations for Cam and Shedeur.
Right. So you think that they do better with Callahan in Tennessee than at Daboll with the Giants, or with
because they got
my guy Cleveland Stefanski. Both of those guys are pretty good coaches.
Yeah, but they got more around them in Tennessee.
Gotcha.
You know, you go to the Giants saying you got neighbors, and Tyron Tracy kind of showed like some glimpses of being, but that's it.
Yeah.
You're in the division with Jaden Daniels, Jalen Hurts, and whatever, Dak Prescott.
Yeah.
You know, you go to Cleveland, you're in a division with Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, and Tomlin with the Steelers, you know. So those aren't ideal situations for a young quarterback. You know, who's your best? I mean, Jerry Jeudy popped up in Cleveland, but what does Cleveland have offensively outside of Jerry Jeudy?
Facts. Well, man, you know this is a sports betting show, so we got to get your
angles. Let's get it.
We got to get your angles. We know you know a little thing or two about these plays, man. So we're going to start with the Commanders and the Eagles, man. What you think about it, it's Commanders are catching 6.5 right now, games in Philly. Looks like the weather's going to hold up, but just like you were speaking about, that's the main thing that I was looking at on this game is the weather, because we know how Washington plays offensively. Let's get your spiel on it.
Hey, Wagering World, let's make some money. I came up with what I think is a rock-solid process to get to these results. And listen, I know you guys have been sports betting for a long time. Just me and Spread, but when your name is Spread, I would assume that There's some connotation there, right? All you can do in sports betting is have a good process. And then you just got to pray to the gods that luck falls on your side more times than it doesn't. So right. Here's what I came up with. I am going to, and listen, I normally don't advocate parlays, but I think there's some value here by the way that I'm going to do it. I'm going to parlay the Eagles and the Chiefs money line.
Okay.
I think Philly and Kansas City find a way to win at home. That's a plus 145. I'm going to turn around and 6-point teaser the Commanders and Bills. So tease the Commanders up to 12, tease the Bills up to 7.5. So now I've got a 7-point middle in the Chiefs-Bills game and an 11-point middle in the Eagles-Commanders games. So now if Philly and KC wins, but the Bills keep it within a touchdown or less, I win both bets. As long as the Commanders keep it within 12 or less on their teaser. So I wanted to kind of go with what I think happens if they play the game 5 times, not what I think could happen if the scenario is perfect for the dog. Because I think people are overlooking how good the Chiefs are defensively. And I think they're overlooking how fortunate the Commanders have been from a turnover standpoint and from a risk standpoint. They have gone for it on fourth down, damn near every fourth down in both playoff games, and they've been very lucky to convert a lot of these. So at some point, I think the word in gambling is regression.
Yeah.
At some point, I think this regresses back to the mean, which I want to say on the year, fourth down attempts are somewhere around 31-32% in the National Football League. I'd have to double check that. But those are my two plays that I have regarding the teams. I'm going to moneyline parlay Eagles, Chiefs. It comes out to plus 145. And do a two-leg, six-point teaser, Commanders, Bills. That's minus 125. And see if I can hit both bets.
I like that a lot, Sean. That's a really short play. Guys, hey, we bring the best on here, man. That was a really wonderful approach. You're right about Dan Quinn. Going to catch up to him sooner or later, as we saw with Dan Campbell last year in San Francisco. That's the only reason they lost, because he was going for it too many times. Brandon Staley lost his job. Same stuff, just taking too many chances. You know, we call it playing Madden football. You got to respect Madden, man. You know, Madden, if you don't punt it, we supposed to punt it, man. It's a turnover. So, yeah, it's about to catch up with him on that. Anything for Sean Spread before we get him out of here?
Yeah, I got one more question. Let's talk Chiefs-Bills real quick. And, you know, in the media, on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, there's a lot of talk about the officiating with the Chiefs game. And I just want to know, from a player's perspective, how much did you guys talk about officiating before the game? And how much would a bad call rattle you guys on the sideline? Because we know those do happen in sports. And whether or not it's intentional or not, how much would that change the way that you guys are on the sideline when you're receiving a bad
call? Why did you do this to him? I wanted to go the whole show without having to make him remember Bird Emanuel. Thanks, Fred.
Well, I'm so sorry. I did.
History has tried to X me out of the fact that I was the actual quarterback that threw the ball to Bird for the Bird Emanuel catch. So I've seen it happen live. I'll tell you this, man. You so used to the ref screwing it up, it really don't bother you. Like, you're in the game and you know, like, it's probably a little more magnified because the Chiefs play so many primetime games over the course of the year. And in every primetime game, it seems like they get favorable refereeing. But you got to think about an NFL regular season and all the games that go on Sunday. Damn near every one of those games, one team feel like the refs was tripping.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're kind of, I don't know the word I'm looking for, but like,
numb to it.
Yeah, you're numb to it in a way. Yeah. Like, you expect it. Like, until the ref calls the Chiefs right tackle for lining up in the backfield.
Oh, my God.
Four plays in a row. Then I know the officiating is not on the up.
Was he a wing back or a left tackle?
He looks like he plays for the Naval Academy. And
what the hell?
He's
so far from the and they let him do it. Just every play. And then you had to do this, Fred. Like, what are the first national games that we saw this? Like, everyone watching the game was like, there's no way they got about to list Sean King, rookie, brother, and Tony Dungy with the Super Bowl.
And McNair was already there. And McNair had already won.
Yeah, yeah. So we're like, it's no way this going to happen. And when they did the Bird Emanuel catch, they used it as a rule later, not thinking about the consequences for my brother right here that could have went from being the first rookie Super Bowl quarterback and deserved that, and it was taken from him. And now we see the same thing. I feel like Lamar and the Ravens got screwed way more than the Texans. The Texans caught some bad spots, but, man, the fact that that game was so close and Buffalo was having so many problems moving the ball and you allowed them to score a touchdown when you allowed Keon to push off the freaking defensive back to the ground and turned it into a pass interference, and that ended up giving them four more points. The spread was 2 points, and how much did the Ravens lose by? 2 points. So now, those things, man.
I don't give defensive backs any leeway. I mean, y'all gotta be they have to be the dumbest group of football players out of all the positions.
That's true.
This is
true,
the only position where they will wrap their entire arms around a guy that's not even trying to really get open, and then look at the referee like he's crazy for calling holding.
That's true.
I just don't get it. I don't understand their mentality. But I do have two more wagers just for people that like the player prop side.
Yeah, let's hear it, Sean.
So as much has been said about A.J. Brown in the book, you know, my theory is this: playing wide receiver for Jalen Hurts puts you in therapy. So that's Jalen. That's A.J. Brown's in-game therapy, you know.
Read the book.
If Jalen won't throw in the ball, let me go read, right? So this passage, so I don't do anything erratic. He's been invisible in both playoff games. I'm going to take a two-leg parlay, A.J. Brown anytime touchdown, and A.J. Brown 100-plus receiving yards. I think he's due a big breakout game. Hopefully it comes Sunday. That is actually an 8-1 wager.
Nice.
And in the other game, I do think the Chiefs finally have a fully healthy Pacheco. Pacheco's rush line is only 32.5. Now, this gets dicey because they seem to want to play Kareem Hunt in the inside the 10, but I'm going to parlay Pacheco over 32.5 yards and anytime touchdown, that's 4-1. So, two player prop kind of correlating with the fact that I think the Eagles and Chiefs are going to win outright. I don't know if I trust Philly to cover that number. Philly gets so conservative when they get a lead. I hate laying points with them.
Yeah.
You know, they'll be up 11 and act like they're up 21. You know, it'll, you know, get real weird sometimes with the way that they run offense. By the way, shout out to the referee in the Green Bay Packers Eagle game for not calling that pass interference that would have blew the spread.
Yeah, man.
I mean, that was blatant pass interference when they gave the Packers the ball at the one, and I had the Eagles. I laid the points, and I got out of there scot-free. I say never again.
Yeah, I had the old Packers right there. Man, you heard all the plays Deshaun gave us, man. He's a friend of the show, man. We'll have him on again. We always bring him around this time, man, because he's lived it, man. He's actually been in the wars, man. And as I said, now Jaden Daniels goes down the path that Deshaun did and now goes in enemy territory as an underdog. Can he cover like Sean? Can he win outright?
Yeah, 5-star in Vegas, 5-star investments, the wagering world. To all of you guys in the chat, just checking out the video. Good luck to all your wagers this weekend. Can we all have some great games and make some money?
Sean, where can they find you at, man?
You got to be a real one to tweet at me because I do attack back. I'm a dog that does bite. My Twitter has to beware of return tweets. In my bio. Now, it's at Real Sean King, S-H-A-U-N-K-I-N-G. I was late to the Twitterverse, and when I tried to get at Sean King, there was a white guy that's a black activist. I don't know how this works. whose first name is Jeffrey, his middle name is Sean, his last name is King. He beat me to it. He took at Sean King, so I had to put at Real Sean King to get a handle. So hit me up on Twitter, X, whatever it's called. Y'all have a great weekend, man. Appreciate it.
Hey, it's love, bro. I'll see you later. I'll pull up on you a little bit later. See you.
All right,
brother.
Thanks, Sean.
Super Bowl champion, Sean King, man. Always great to have him on. All right, Spritz, you know, let's get in this present, man, and give him some plays on the game.
All right, let's jump into the present five-star, the first one on the docket. We talked about it a little with Sean, but I want to get your in-depth thoughts here as Washington travels to take on Philadelphia. Let's see if this line has moved since the last time we talked. Seems to be pretty steady here, still at minus six. So in both games, it feels like the market has kind of found equilibrium. I haven't seen a lot of movement this week. What are your thoughts here when the Commanders take on Philadelphia Eagles?
Man, I love everything about Washington. You know that, Brad. You know I'm a huge fan of Dan Quinn, huge fan of Jaden Daniels. It's just all the odds are against them at this moment, man. You got the public now fell in love with the team after they blew out Detroit, so they're all over them, and they're all taking the points, so we don't have that. The market's definitely against us. Then, now you're going as a rookie quarterback on the road, outside elements in a team that really likes to pass the ball. But what people don't know is that the Commanders are actually the second leading team running the ball offensively as well. So they can put it on the ground, but I feel like they're one of those teams that their pass kind of sets up their run. I don't feel like it's their focal point. I feel like Jaden Daniels is. But their problem in this game is going to be, how the hell do they stop Saquon Barkley? If Dan Quinn can figure out a way to stop Saquon Barkley, then the Commanders are going to win this game. But nothing that I can look at statistically shows me that. But look, same thing happened with Buffalo, right? Everything statistically panned out that the Ravens were the better team. And I actually think the game showed that. But as we saw in the game, you can have the right handicap. The system can meet the standards and everything, and still at the end of the day, end up losing the game. You know, so that's what happened, unfortunately, with the Ravens game. And I don't want to get caught in that same spot with the Commanders. Washington ranks 27th against the run in terms of success rate. They're 29th in EPA per play defensively. And then when it comes to running, teams have a great success rate against them running the ball. They're ranked 30th in that, man. The 51% is the highest. And then they also are 31st in defensive EPA per play, which is horrible, man. It's only 32 teams. Their pass defense is way better, but we know that the Eagles are going to try to run the ball, man. The first game, Barkley ran for 146 yards on these guys and two touchdowns. Second game, he had 150 yards and two touchdowns. Another thing to watch on this one is that the contact situation. I was speaking about that earlier, about how the Commanders are last in the league in contact to the running back. So that means the running back, when he gets the handoff, he gets through the line without contact against them more than anyone. So he might 5 yards down the field. I don't know the exact yardage, but they're last in the league in that. And the Eagles are first in getting Saquon Barkley through the line before getting contact. He gets the most yards before contact because the way that offensive line leans on you, Lane Johnson and those guys. So I just don't know how Commanders can win this game. I know if they can get in, turn it into a Jalen Hurts having to sit back there and throw the ball, and they can finally shut down Saquon, then I think Commanders can win money line. But this just seems like a Saquon Barkley game. Saquon has been waiting his whole career to get in this type of situation. He's one of those rare running backs that actually can take over a game. With that said, you can never count the Commanders out. So how am I going to lay 6 points with the Eagles against a Commanders team with the best quarterback in the fourth quarter in the whole NFL? He's 72% with now 13 touchdowns in the fourth quarter and overtime. He just put 3 touchdowns on this Eagles team in a comeback win and beat them in Washington. So he's not afraid of this team. It's hard to beat a team 3 times in a row. So I'm going to add it on to my ball and parlay I'll talk about a little bit later. I'm going to tease the Commanders up to plus 12 on this one. I do like the over with the tease where we'll go over 40. I think that both these teams can put up a little points. I think more so with the Eagles running the ball early and with the Commanders coming back and fighting late, throwing the ball. So I'll be teasing the Commanders on this. When I get to the bottom parlay, I'll give you the whole bet.
Yeah, and teasers during the NFL playoffs is one of the best bets that you can make. If they had some hypothetical world where you could only place 3 or 4 teasers a year, it would be the most EV to only place them during the NFL playoffs. Talking about this game, five-star, to me, and I'm sure I'm not the only one who thinks this, The X factor is the health of Jalen Hurts, man. If Jalen Hurts is healthy, this spread might even be too low, right? If we knew that Hurts was 100% and we saw him the way he was playing midseason, I think the line would be 7.5. However, he's clearly not healthy. Lingering effects from the concussion, and then we saw it with the lower body last week. One of the big advantages that Jalen Hurts has, mobility. He's hard to tackle. And the way that he looked giving up those sacks against the Los Angeles Rams, you can see that clearly the guy's not 100%.
Yeah.
I think you can make the argument, even if they're both healthy, that Jaden Daniels is better than Jalen Hurts. Just accuracy, touch underneath, ability to read the defenses. I'm not saying he's way ahead of them, but I'm saying he might have already been the better quarterback. Now, if Jalen Hurts is compromised, he's significantly better. And to me, that could be the difference in that I got a plus 242 offshore. If he's not 100%, the Commanders are live to win this game.
Yeah.
So that's the X factor to me there. If we knew Philly was fully healthy, like I said, I think the sixth line would be wrong. I would actually have it a little farther, because if you look at the other position groups, I don't know where you would see Washington has an advantage. I can't remember the one I was listening to, but it was X's and O's guys that scout actually do tape, and they're saying, hey, there's only a couple guys on this Commanders defense that would start on Philadelphia if they combine the teams.
Yeah. That's what Dan Quinn's going to have to make up in scheme so much. And if any coach can do it, he can, right?
Yeah, but in the NFL, quarterback's so important. That's the reason that the Commanders were the laughingstock of the league. They make one draft pick, hire two good coaches, and all of a sudden they're in the NFC Championship game, because it's the hardest position to play in sports, but it's also the most important. So in spite of all this, we've seen this plenty of times. I mean, how many times could we say the same thing about the Bills, and they're in the AFC Championship?
Yeah.
Josh Allen isn't surrounded with a bunch of all pros, right?
No.
This isn't the 82 Redskins, where their backups were better than the other team's starters. If you remember back then, I can't remember the owner's name at the time.
Jack Cook Kent, right?
Yeah, yeah. They would have better players on. He would pay people millions on the practice squad before the salary cap, and he'd have better guys on his practice squad than other teams had starting. Regardless, my point is, things are pointing towards the Eagles, but I would not be surprised to see the Commanders get the upset if Jalen Hurts isn't 100%.
It's a difficult one, man, on this one. I'll be honest, man. That I feel like I'm a lot more sure about the evening game.
Then let's go right to it, because I'm wondering where you're landing. I agree with Sean. I'm on Kansas City here, and there's not a lot that I can point to football-wise, but I'll say at this point in the year, I think that home field is worth a lot more than it is during the regular season. And I mentioned that in last week's game. I felt that if Baltimore had home field, they would have won that game, and that was the difference in that game. And unfortunately for the Bills fans, I think it's going to be the same case this week. So I do like Kansas City to get it done. But almost like with my Bills pick last week, there's not a lot of stats. There's not a lot of DVOA, EPA, yards per play that's going to back up my argument. But regardless, I like Kansas City here. I just think that they're well coached. And at the end of the day, they know how to win. People will point to the fact they didn't blow teams out all year. But the thing is, it also shows that they're going to be comfortable with the game on the line. We've seen this plenty of times with teams where they blow everyone out all year, and then they get into a close playoff game, and they're like, wait a second, we're not used to fourth quarter pressure. Kansas City's definitely going to be used to it. I like the Chiefs as well. Where are you landing on this one?
We all three of us are experts, and we like the Chiefs, and how can you not? It's the perfect storm for the Chiefs. They're the most disrespected back-to-back champion ever. They're the most disrespected best record home field advantage team ever. They're the most disrespected every year. The AFC Conference Championship game is in Arrowhead in the last 8 years, except for, I think, one. So, like, if as a bettor, how can you not bet on Mahomes and Andy Reid in this situation? You'll be a fool not to, especially with the fact that Everyone is liking Buffalo. Everyone's talking about the Chiefs are cheaters, but no one's watching film. And if you watch the game like we did last week, Buffalo was not that impressive, man. It's just they got the win, and kudos to them for pulling that off. But they better play a lot better than that against Kansas City. Josh Allen is 0-2 in the playoffs against Mahomes. I feel like Mahomes is one of those guys, much like Brady, when he sees another guy who's trying to take his crown across the field, you're going to get the best version of him. This is one of the few years in the last couple that he's going in with no injuries. We got a fresh Mahomes that he got his full arsenal. His ankle isn't hurt. He doesn't have a high ankle sprain this year. So I expect him to play ball. I like a couple props in this as well. I like Khalil Shakir for the Buffalo Bills to go over 4.5 receptions. He's averaged 5.5 receptions this year. Had 6 the last 2 games. He's always going to be Josh Allen's favorite target because he trusts him to be where it's supposed to be. He had 8 catches against Kansas City earlier this year. I know that Trent McDuffie will probably shadow him, or maybe they switch it up and they double him and allow Trent McDuffie to play their weaker receiver, Keon Coleman. If they do that, then it's going to be hard. But I think at the end of the game, when it comes down to the Bills trying to get back into the game, Shakir will be able to go over the number. So I like that one as a prop. And I also like for Nuke Hopkins to go over 2.5 receptions. He didn't have any receptions last week as he was shut down by the young cornerbacks in Houston. I know he's been in Mahomes' ear. This is Hopkins' first opportunity to go to the Super Bowl, and I think that he's a big-time player and he'll have some receptions. So I think that he can get over 2.5 receptions, get to 3 for sure. He's averaged 3.3 receptions since he's joined Kansas City. As far as the side, I'm beating up Kansas City. I'm loaded up on them. I'm taking this game. As long as things stay the way they are right now with the market, I don't see Kansas City losing. I think that they actually win fairly easy. I think that Buffalo sees this game that the offensive weapons that they have just aren't enough to overcome a really good defense that's smartly coached by Spagnuolo and has the talent that the Chiefs have. And to get to where they need to be, they're going to need another big-time player. They went and got the receiver from Cleveland and brought him over. But he hasn't panned out the way that they thought he would. So with that said, give me the Kansas City Chiefs.
All right. Looks like we agree there. And we, of course, are looking forward to see how that game turns out. But, you know, maybe a Super Bowl rematch here between the Eagles and the Chiefs. 5-star. You know, you and I have both been staying up a little later. Well, I don't know. You might usually stay up that late, right? But
no. Yeah.
The Australian Open is on. It's been a lot of fun. We talked about it at the top of the show. But let's talk real quick. You know, the finals are set. Tonight, you know, around midnight our time, they'll go ahead and put the first ball in play. And that is going to be Madison Keys versus Aryna Sabalenka. Let me grab the latest odds here, as I know that, of course, Sabalenka will be the heavy favorite. She's minus 385. Minus 4.5 on the game spread, but you can get it down to 4. Looks like Keys is taking money on the plus 4.5. And with the way these two women serve, I kind of like Keys on the game spread here, plus the 4.5. What do you think?
I definitely like Keys on the game spread. She has had a little bit success against Sab. She's beat her once out of 4 matchups, but she had never beat Swiatek, and she was able to overcome that. The main thing is, you know, that Maddie's serving well because Swiatek is the best returner in the game, and you know she wanted that one. You know that she wanted to win that match. She wanted to show people that she could win on the fast surfaces in Australia and kind of, you know, change the narrative on her game, and she wasn't able to overcome it. When it came down to it and it was got to have it serves, Maddie was able to deliver, and I think she'll be able to protect the serve really well against Sabalenka. I think that this match does go 3 sets, so I'd lean for sure the over on whatever it is in the games, and I would be taking Madison Keys +4.5 as well. I do see Sabalenka holding on tight, winning a tight match, but I think that it does go into 1 tiebreaker.
Yeah, with the way that Keys is serving, and we've also seen Sabalenka tank return games in the past, right? So if she goes down 30 love, she just goes all out, just winner or bust, and kind of conserves energy there, which I think leads well towards taking the +4.5. A little bit correlated, I also like the over 21.5, and that might protect you, you know, if you get like a 7-6, 6-7, and then a 6-1 there at the end. So I also like the over 21 and a half. Man, so I had it on last night, right? I'm settling in, thinking, boy, how long am I going to be here, right?
Yeah.
Tight first set there. And you can see Novak wasn't moving his best, but I was shocked. I mean, because I had the volume off. And all of a sudden, I saw him walk off the court, but I thought he was just taking a bathroom break or something, right? All of a sudden, they're interviewing him. I go, oh, wow, let me jump on X or Twitter and see what's going on. Novak retires. So that actually, I thought, was a bit of an advantage for Zverev, getting almost like a day off. I mean, it's almost like the perfect amount. You know, if I was coaching him, hey, we're going to get out there. We're going to play one heavy, intense set. Then we're going to go ahead and rest you up for the final. However, to me, Yannick Sinner is just head and shoulders above Zverev as a player right now. And I know he has the allegations swirling around him, but it hasn't seemed to have affected him at all. And we know the different players handle these controversies different ways. He seems to be a me against the world type guy, right? Great album there that came out back in 93, if y'all remember. But yeah, but he doesn't seem to be involved at all. I think this game spread's a little tougher here. It's once again, it's -4.5. I like the keys plus the games a little more. Sinner, I wouldn't be surprised if he was able to cover this one. So I do not have a play here in the men's final. Am I leaving money on the table, and how are you approaching this one? Also, I would be remiss if I didn't mention it's a total of 40 here. So almost an over 3.5 sets if you're betting the total. If you bet the total, you're basically saying it's not going to be a straight set match. Side or total,
I got how you approaching this one? On stations, I just bet it. I got my
38.5.
Yeah, they allow
you got a great number because it's already 40 at offshore.
Yeah, they allow you to change them up over there. I got 38.5 and -128. I actually just sent it out to all the clients. So if you guys can find that over 38.5 games, I see it happening. This isn't going to be a walk in the park for Yannick Sinner at all. Zverev has had a lot of success against this kid, and especially on hard courts. The one match the center did beat him was in the semis at Cincinnati last year, and it was tight as hell. They went 11-9 in the tiebreaker. Center won the first set. The second set, Zverev won 7-5. And in the final set, Sinner was able to outlast him 7-4 in the tiebreaker. So Sasha's rested up. We know the center's in his prime right now, but Sasha's as well. Sasha's been knocking on the door for a really long time, man. He's tightened up his team. His dad has always been there. His brother's always been there. And I'm rooting for Sasha, man, to kind of change the narrative, man. I had him when he ended up losing the team and the U.S. Open when they had that ridiculous match where he was up two sets and ended up blowing it and losing in the tiebreaker. Heartbreak for him. He's gotten to 27 years old. Great speech by him last night when he talked about how can you guys boo Joker after all he's left on his court for you guys. He's played with an elbow strain and things like that. I think that Joker was hurt. If he would have won the first set, he probably would have retired. I think that he's a good friend of Zverev's, and he feels like this is Alexander's turn. And, like, why am I going to sit out here and push it? I know that physically I can't compete. I left it all on the court to beat Alcaraz because, you know, that's his thing. That's his new rivalry. He wants to hold off the young gun as long as possible until they have their final Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan moment where he sweeps him, where it's no way he can beat him anymore. But right now, Djokovic has gotten Alcaraz the last two times he's played him, but he leaves everything out there when he does so because he's getting up in age, man. No matter how we want to look at it, him and LeBron both, man, Father Time always wins. So I think Djokovic really likes Zverev and was like, I'm not going to sit up here and push this kid anymore and, you know, make it where he has to waste more energy because I know I'm not going to be able to play in the finals. So let me make sure he's rested up and have a shot to shoot at Sinner because no one on the tour really likes Sinner, man. They don't like him because, much like Iga, they feel like they cheated. You know, whether – and that even if they didn't cheat, the ATP played favoritism for them. So I think Sasha Zverev is going to come in there as the outlaw, as the guy that no one likes and – as far as in the media coverage, the ATP, and I think he's going to get this guy a hell of a push. So I'll be on the over 38.5 is what I got. But I'm going to put a small amount also on Zverev plus 230. That's too good of a number to catch on a guy who's played this guy really well, who's beaten him more times than he's beaten him. He's leads the head-to-head. He's 3-1 against him on hard court. So I think that Verver is really a super live dog in this game. So give me Verver plus 220, but for sure give me the over 38.5 on the games.
All right. Should be fun in the tennis season. Kicks off, man. I love the Australian Open. I love watching the matches at this time of year. I wish they played in Australia for 6 months of the season, because to me, it's the best. Right after the NBA sets off, I flip right over, right?
Yeah.
And then it's got me going till I fall asleep. All right, let's move to the ball and parlay, and I'm going to start. I'm going to steal it from you.
Okay.
Give me the Kansas City Chiefs. That's my play. That's the one that I feel strongest about this weekend. And, you know, in gambling, we like to bet on the streak. A streak can only end once, right? And while these guys are hot, I'm going to continue to ride them. And when I lose, I lose. But I've already won plenty of money back in the Chiefs in this dynasty that they're forming right now. And I'm going to bet on them to continue. You know, if Josh Allen gets it done, I'll go ahead and tip my hat to him and the rest of his great teammates. But unfortunately, man, I think this might be a situation like Barkley, Karl Malone, you know, Patrick Ewing, some of the greats that I grew up with, where they just ran into this guy that was just generational. So, you know, the Bills is probably the better story, but I still think the Chiefs get it done. Give me the Kansas City Chiefs -1.5.
Yep, that'll be a waging world play. We own the Kansas City Chiefs all the way around, including, I guess, Sean King. I'll also throw in for you guys, do a teaser, man. Sean gave you one way to tease it. Another way to tease it that I like as well is teasing up the Chiefs to a +6 and then teasing up the Commanders to +12. Right now, with the end of the year, man, we have the benefit of betting live and being able to read what's going on in the game and make our decisions. Whereas if you guys, a lot of you put in your plays early. So the safe way to go this week is always to tease. Thanks to Sean King for coming on the show. As always, we appreciate you guys for tuning into the Wagering World as we near the end of the NFL season. Anything for the people before we get out of spread?
Man, it's winding down, but it's been a fun year, and I'm looking forward to more action this weekend.
Definitely, man. Hey, guys, as always, I dedicate this show to the greatest Houston sports fan I know, and that's my father, John H. Lindsay. I do this for you, Dad. Big week coming up, you guys. Like the show, subscribe, tell your friends about it. We keep growing, man. We keep showing love to you. It's always going to be us versus the machine. This is the Wagering World. We'll see you next week.